Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm joined this afternoon by Claire, who is with us to speak about the upcoming email class, Project Joy. Welcome, Claire.
Well, thank you, Jen. It is indeed a joy to be here and talking about Project Joy.
Excellent. I'm feeling it already. So I always like to start out when we interview someone on the email classes just about the basic structure of it, because mm-hmm. although I know that many, many folks listening have done a number of email classes, I also know that open air is one of the main ways that people who are brand new to practice find us. And in fact, what we've been hearing lately is that there are people who listen to open air for years, and we haven't seen them on retreat or any of those sorts of things. But I know there are lots of people listening who may never have participated in email class. So I thought we might start there by just kind of having you run us through what is an email class, how does it work, what are the components of it, and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. So an email class is an easy way to participate in Sangha. Mm-hmm. And the way to sign up is to go to the Living Compassion website and sign up there. And then how it works is that when the class starts, everybody receives an email 2 times a week, I think usually on a Tuesday and a Thursday in the past, although who knows, it may be different this time. And so the email arrives in your inbox. And in the email, there's some text to read mm-hmm. and then an assignment to look at something following reading the text. And often there's an assignment to consider something or practice something for 24 or 48 hours, mm-hmm. and then everybody gets to respond. And there's a link to a web page where you can make a response of 50 words, and that's quite exciting because you really get to distill your thoughts about your response.
Yeah, yeah.
And then all of those responses go anonymously to the guide, and the guide responds to everybody that puts in, you know, a response for email class. And then all of the anonymous entries to the email class and the responses from the guide get posted so we can all have a Sangha experience and read what people are looking at and what the responses are, which I find to be such a unifying experience to say, I'm not alone. It's not me doing
this. And you know what's so funny, Claire, is that there's a lot going on at the monastery right now, and we've been kind of just busy and doing all kinds of things. And as you're describing the email class, and I'm just being present and listening to you, I realize that it's not really been on my radar screen that we're about to start an email class. And I just watched, as you're describing it, just this sense of delight and excitement. Oh, my gosh. We have an email class coming up.
Indeed, indeed.
You know, just because that every component that you're describing, that the classes come out, and the classes are works of art, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I mean, go ahead.
Often there are quotes in there that make my heart sing. And so there's many levels. There's doing the email class, but it's also an opportunity to enhance the recording and listening practice, because I find it helpful to record the classes and listen to them. I've heard that some folks actually record and listen to some of the responses and the guide's encouragement to the responses.
Yeah.
So there's many. And then there's the beautiful piece of getting individual guidance, as it were. When I send a response, then the guide will respond to that. So mm-hmm. And then there's the Sangha experience of seeing what everybody else is looking at, too. We're all in this together.
I love that piece you said, because that's so my experience too, that, oh my goodness, we're all so much the same, you know, that we all have the same struggles and the same hopes and the same aspirations and the same pure heart and the same innocence and goodness and all those things. We're just, we really are in this together.
I used to think about, my conditioning or my resistance was like coming out different or special than anybody else's. And through doing email classes and Sangha experiences, I get to say, no, conditioning is just this thing out there. It isn't me, and it's not personal. And that's so helpful to, like, step back from it in that way.
And I think the number of responses is one of the things that really accomplishes that. I mean, you said a minute ago that Sherry responds to every single thing that people write in, which is a huge benefit of the 50 words or fewer, so that it's actually manageable. Mm-hmm. I don't know how manageable it is for Sherry, to tell you the mm-hmm. truth. I don't know how she does it. But mm-hmm. it's manageable for those of us who are reading the responses, because mm-hmm. they're short. You know, people mm-hmm. are writing, they're really, as you said, they're taking the time to really look at, okay, what's the distillation of what I'm seeing in this assignment, writing that in, and then hundreds, literally hundreds of responses that in that, it's so clear that it isn't my conditioning. It isn't my resistance. It's a process of suffering that happens, and it's also a process of liberation that we can support each other in.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also, there's a lot of freedom in the email class in that a participant doesn't have to read all the responses yeah, in order to yeah. Get a lot of benefit out of the email class. And the responses mm-hmm. are available after the class is finished, so that, you know, if you want to go back and review yeah. things, it's very spacious.
Yeah.
People
yeah,
can work at their own pace and get a lot out of it, or whatever yeah. amount of time and energy they have for it.
Yeah, that's really well put. And that there is space also to, you know, if you are traveling for a while and you get behind on an assignment, that's okay. That there's a kind of period of time within which you can still respond to a previous assignment. So
indeed,
yeah,
indeed.
That's a good point. That it mm-hmm. really is it can be a self-paced kind of an opportunity.
Right, and we have to say a little about the topic.
Okay, let's talk about the topic.
So my understanding is that we're going to be practicing with our experience of nature as a route yeah. to reclaiming the joy that is within us and the joy that unites all of us.
Yeah. So
I'm very
such
excited
a good topic.
I'm very excited about it. My experience is when I'm out in nature, uh-huh. nature, and I see, like, you know, there are big trees and dead trees and flowers here and dirt there, and everything is perfectly fine exactly as it is.
Yep.
And there's no commentary I project from the trees about, you know, I'm better than you or this should be different. So it's so, I find it such a relaxing, unifying experience to be in nature.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so funny, isn't it, that it kind of goes back to your thing of realizing when you read the responses, we're all the same, and to get it, well, I am nature. No wonder I feel so relaxed and good in nature, because it isn't me, you know, a human, and then nature. It's all the same suchness. It's all the same thing. And so what a fabulous practice of using that experience, as you said, of imagining, I mean, the trees aren't out there going, gosh, this branch, I don't know why I have a branch here. I shouldn't have a branch here. I mean, and to then kind of own that process and bring it back to ourselves and realize, well, we're perfect, you know, in just the way we are as well.
Indeed, we're perfect just the way we are. Mm-hmm. And just in case somebody does not have hiking boots, one doesn't have to, you know, make a big effort to go out into nature in order to participate in the class, because when we look, we see nature everywhere. You know, the trees
yeah.
outside the window, the
yeah.
the little butterfly that we might see. There's
yeah.
nature is in many forms, and we don't have to travel far to see it and enjoy it.
Yeah. You know, in fact, it's as you say that, it's often my experience that if I'm in some place where there isn't a lot of, quote, nature, that when I come across a tree in, you know, on a sidewalk or a squirrel, you know, in a city area, that it really stands out and I really notice it and I notice the
mm-hmm.
impact that it has on me, to kind of be reminded of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just of that life living.
Yes, that peace in nature, that peace in the wildness of things, of nature.
Yeah. So I'm really quite excited, mm-hmm. you know, that we have this opportunity coming up. And I know there's a whole team. So Sherry responds to all the classes, and there's a whole team back there who I know are already in high gear getting ready for offering the class to us and writing the assignments. And as I say, mm-hmm. I experience every class is just an exquisite
mm-hmm.
An exquisite piece of writing, and the care and detail and attention that I project is put into each one is really
right.
It's quite an extraordinary gift.
Yes, yes, the classes are crafted to be little gateways to the heart, I find. Really. Follow
that's
the
a
road
nice
and
quote. Yeah. The classes are crafted to be a gateway to the heart. Yeah. Because right in there, just recording the classes themselves are such neat recording assignments, aren't they? To just record
yes,
the class and listen back to it.
When I listen to a class, every time I listen to it, there seems to be more that I think, oh, I hadn't heard that bit before. It resonates in a different level.
Yeah.
And the class starts on November the 1st.
November
1st? The 25th, so.
Okay. And the sign-up deadline, I'm thinking, is probably right before that, maybe the day or two before, I would imagine.
October the 30th at 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Okay. October 30th, 5 p.m. Pacific time. Well, thank you, Claire, for being a very well-informed, inspiring guest about the email class.
It has been my deep pleasure, and I just want to echo a deep appreciation for all who put the time and energy to making these classes available to us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and appreciation to you for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks, Claire. Take care. All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Claire. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry. Let's try this one.
There you go.
There we go.
You got it.
Sherry.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm in the land of clicks. That's why you couldn't find me. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Clicking along.
AT&T tells me they're still working on it.
Oh, good. I hope they're working diligently.
Yeah.
I was listening to Jen and Claire. That was wonderful. And I found that if I listened really hard to what they were saying, the clicking was not quite so dominant.
Okay.
So are you hearing the clicking, Michael?
No, I'm on a landline.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Oh, lucky you. Okay. Well, good. And I don't know if other people are hearing it, but that's going to be my technique, because it's either that or run screaming from the room. if anybody's looking for a little torture system, this would be a good one. These little random clicks echoing in your head.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that going to work for you today, this line?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Willingness is your first name, isn't it?
Oh, willingness is my first name. And, I mean, you know, I put up with a lot to be here in this situation with all of you. So there is that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Being with Sangha, you know, just go through darn near anything. So.
Great.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I have some announcements here, unless you wanted to kick us off with something or had something
no
email
no
that.
No, I'm excited about it. It's true, it's coming on up, and I'm eager for it because I love email classes, and I think Claire and Jen just did a beautiful job of laying out all the high points. Joy, nature, you know, how can we miss with that? So
yes. And as they were mentioning, I love to record the assignment in the morning and then just put it on loop all day. It's just wonderful.
Uh-huh.
It's really great.
It takes deeper and deeper and deeper, doesn't it?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And we don't forget, which is the whole benefit of recording and listening. So in the old days, you know, we would read an assignment and think, oh, yeah, I want to focus on that during the day, and then you know, maybe before bedtime, some voice reminds us that we forgot to do it. But now we put it on loop, and then every time there's an opportunity to listen, boom, there we are, and we're right where we want to be. So, yeah, that's a great technique.
Yes, excellent. Okay, I've got a couple of announcements here. Spots are still open for the New Year's retreat in Menlo Park.
Mm-hmm.
Sit with Sangha to ring in the new year. And as we just heard, there's still time to sign up for our next email class, Project Joy. We'll practice finding joy in nature together.
Yes.
And I think Claire said the sign-up was October 30th at 5 p.m.,
yes.
The deadline, which is 2 days before. So before you go out on Halloween, if you do that, be
right.
sure to sign up.
Mm-hmm. As you're putting the finishing touches on your costume.
Yes.
Exactly. Sign up.
Exactly. And visit schedule.livingcompassion.org for more information on these and all our events.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of reminders to make guest show, to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry today, press *6 on your phone and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. And so let's get started here.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Sure. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Susan from Los Angeles.
Well, hello. You're first tonight.
I know. I'm in shock.
It's setting a new something here. How are you?
I'm good. I've tried to call in several times, but it's been a while since I connected, so I thought I better try again, and it's just great to hear your voice and to be on again.
Good. Well, what's going on?
Well, it feels like this long journey I've been on. I started off sort of looking, I can't remember what year we were doing what, but looking at trusting myself, and from there it evolved into learning to relax into life and allowing life to live me. And now it's at this place of acceptance.
This place of what?
Of learning to just accept things. God, I'm upset. The hardest part for me is I can accept, well, I guess I can. I was going to say I can accept my suffering, but what I can't is when my children suffer. I feel so helpless and powerless, and I know that's the story of life, but wow.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question about that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense that your children would, it might be a three-part question, but
okay.
if you could solve their problems, would they want you to?
No.
Uh-huh. And do you have a sense of why not?
I don't know, something around efficacy in the world themselves, that mm-hmm. they can take care. You know, I have two sons. One, he has problems and this and that, and when I hear him, my heart just goes, ugh. I have another son that's really depressed, and at times he's suicidal. So in addition to the suffering, I live in fear of, oh, my God, is this the phone call kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
And yet I know I at some point I have to just say you're adequate, you can do this, and if you can't, I can't prevent this.
Yeah.
But that fear is always inside me. And,
yeah.
And I just think if I keep thinking that way, he'll think that way about himself. So I don't know how to be with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when do I stop trying and when do I, you know, I don't have the answer. I think it must be, I realize talking to you, must be approaching the time when I let him go and just say, you either sail or you don't at this point, that there truly is nothing else I can do. Or I'm
right.
not the one to do it.
Yes.
You know, somebody else could help him, but it's not going to be me.
Well, yes, that feels like a really important realization to have, that there are times when we have roles, and then there are times when we don't, except perhaps the role of loving unconditionally, which we can always do. I think it is really important, as we do awareness practice, that we have an experience, and by that I mean we practice diligently to reach the point of realizing that in this case, your sons are each an expression of life. Yeah. And as such, they belong to life.
I'm breathing.
Yeah. I do know how hard it is. In fact, I just talked with someone in my family who's in a very similar position, who talked about being depressed since the new year. Mm-hmm. And I've written a book on depression, right? I have a few suggestions for what a person could do. And I know that those suggestions are not helpful because of exactly that awareness that each one of us wants to have our own experience of life. Essentially, we want to do it ourselves. We want, at the most basic level, whether we know this is going on or not, we want to work out our own salvation diligently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you say that, I can really hear it in my heart.
Yeah.
Particularly this one son, he's headstrong to judgment, but he has a really strong will. And I bought him your book years ago on depression, and I know it's just sat on his shelf, and I just think someday he'll open it up. I don't know when that's going to be. And the other thing that's really been a source of comfort for me, one time I was talking to you, and you talked about, I think it was something around letting life live you, and you said, you know, the way I know life is living me is I just kind of get a reminder. It feels like a little tap on the shoulder or a little push on the back that it's time to move or to act or not do or not act. And I've been trying to let that be sort of my rules of engagement. If I don't feel that impulse, then I don't do it. Because going up into my mind to figure this out is just more suffering for everybody.
Yes. And there is one other element that I think is super important. Mm-hmm. And that is, well, my teacher's line for it was, how can you hope to end suffering in the world when you won't end it in the one place you can truly experience it? And so that is to turn the attention, not to take anything away from anyone else. I'm not suggesting that, because there is just plenty of awareness to go around, but to turn the attention to the mother who suffers, and to embrace her in the way she wishes, you wish, the sons could be embraced and held and healed.
Yeah, I hear that.
And it certainly will not take any care or love away from anyone else to help her and her suffering.
Yeah, maybe unconsciously I've thought that, like, I can't. If I turn away from them, it's like taking my eye off the ball. Not them, really. It's one in particular, the other one I have more faith in. But it truly is what you said. Come hell or high water, he's going to live his life.
Yeah.
And
And she really needs some care and support. So, you know, I guess there's another aspect of it. These aspects keep rising. Even though we're the parent, or in my case, the grandparent, we're still relevant in our children's lives, even past the point where any of us would think that that's the case. And so sometimes I think, I have no proof whatsoever of this, but it certainly appears this way, that our children are looking to see if we're going to do something that we want them to do. And so for them to know that it's okay to be free, they really need to see someone they know take those steps.
Wow. That feels really true to me, and I think it's something we're going to have to kind of let surface. Like, my mind's going, wow, that feels true. What is it inside me? But I think, yeah, like they're watching, but
yes,
not telling me they're watching.
That's right. And so the question, the probably completely unconscious question is, well, is it possible to end suffering? Is it possible not to be depressed? Is it possible to live a happy, fulfilled life? Is it? I'm not seeing anybody doing it. So how can we love unconditionally and let go and be all right with everything exactly as it is? I think that's our assignment.
Okay. I was going to say I can do that. It's certainly a direction, because all the other directions I've moved in just seem to increase the suffering all the way around. So, and just connecting and just talking about it and, you know, listening to you eases it.
Yeah.
It's not an answer, but just the connection makes it easier to breathe.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And that's what we're going for, right? Nothing is different. We're just opening to and accepting what is, and that makes everything different.
Yes, and not being alone helps.
Yeah.
A lot. Yep. Now, maybe that's also what they just need. I don't have to give them the answer. Just let them know I'm here with them, whatever they choose.
That's right. That's right.
Shams. Thank you.
You are so welcome. I'm glad you made it through this evening.
Right, and that's why I was first this time.
Exactly. We didn't have 2 minutes at the end to try to do this. This is, yes, we're very taken care of, aren't we?
We sure are.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks,
good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Susan. You're listening to Open Air. That was fascinating, Sherry. That was great.
What
I heard was that it's up to each of us to do the work.
Yes. Yes, and we don't work out our own salvation in suffering for ourselves in opposition to anything else. It's really, it's all an expansive process.
Yes.
But it does, it seems to me, it's got to start with the one person whose experience we really know, and then it can extend and expand from there.
Yes. Yes. That's my experience as well.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk to another caller.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Stuart in South Carolina.
Well, hello, Stuart. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
Great. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, I can't believe I got on because I called kind of late.
Uh-huh. Well, things seem to be working tonight, so.
Well, that's
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. No, well, tell me what's going on.
Well, I'd say I'm doing pretty good most of the time, and that's an improvement, so.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty happy with that. I think I'm not recording and listening enough. Yeah, you know, I don't do it every day. Excuse me, I probably do it a couple of times a week, and I need to be more diligent about that.
Well, let me ask you this, Stuart. Do you find a benefit in it?
Yes, I think so.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not a huge benefit every time I do it, but I don't know. I just think doing it, there's something about just the fact that you've done it, you know, you feel better. You know that you because you know it's good for you, and so,
right.
It just,
well, and it has that element Susan mentioned, connected. You know,
that's right.
Yeah, for me, that's one of the huge pieces of recording and listening is that it's such a direct way that we can connect with ourselves, that
right.
we can reach that deeper part of us.
Right. Well, Sherry, I called in for. A particular thing that I want to say and see what you think about it.
Okay.
And so what it is, I've been grappling with this, you know, like I get the tweets and I read them, you know, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like one of the themes in the tweets is that life supports us and generally that life is good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like for myself, that is definitely true. Because my life is good, you know, it's comfortable and so on and so forth. I mean, I have my issues like everybody else, but generally I'd say my life is pretty good and well supported by life. But when I look across the world, you know, I mean, I just don't see that, you know, when I think about, you know, all the misery, like with Ebola and, you know, child slaves and, you know, all the bad things that we know are going on in the world, and even things that I've seen myself, like when I was in the Himalayas and saw hungry children in little villages in Nepal. So, you know, so to me, you know, it just seems like it's really not true that life is good and that, you know, everybody's supported by life.
Mm-hmm.
And that just causes me to suffer. And so anyway, I would just like to hear you talk
yeah.
about that.
Well, and that's a huge subject, obviously. And it's one that I think most conscious people grapple with. Well, a lot of unconscious people grapple with it too, but for different reasons. And this is the thing that I would ask you. Can you see that in going to that place, you are leaving an experience of well-being to go into a theory of not well-being?
Yes. Yeah, there's no doubt that, you know, like I'm causing myself to suffer by dwelling on, you know, the misery I know exists in the world. But
yes.
That doesn't mean that misery doesn't exist.
That's right.
It's still there, you know. And
yes. However, with that misery, one of the things that we can know is that we don't actually know what's going on. So I'll tell you a little story that is kind of, I don't know if it's bizarre, but it occurs to me. So when I was first married, we were super poor. And we would work all week long and save our money so that at the end of the week, we could buy a pizza. Okay, and I recall that as the happiest time in our marriage. And as things got easier, problems shifted, and things became problems that weren't of the same immediate nature as the ones in the beginning. And it felt like we lost our focus on what was important.
Right.
And we drifted apart. Now, I only bring that up because if somebody had been looking at us, they and loved us, they probably would have wanted to meet those physical needs that we had so that we our lives could be easier and we could be happier, because that's what we're taught to believe. But that's not actually what happened. Our lives got very easy, and we got more and more unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't actually know. Well, and the, you know, the other side of that, as we know, there are people with very physically comfortable lives who are unutterably miserable. There are people, say, in Cantalomba, who have so little that, I mean, we couldn't live that lifestyle for a day. And yet, we often suspect that they might just be happier than we are. So that idea that people's circumstances are what dictates their life experience, I think is one that supports egos suffering stories, but probably doesn't actually have a basis in what we might call reality.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I see what you're saying, but the examples you're giving me are based on poverty versus not being in poverty, whereas I'm talking about, for instance, being free, because even though you were poor, you still had your freedom. But if
well, in theory, yes.
but if you were gravely ill and your whole village was dying from Ebola or something, yeah, I just think that's another whole ball game, you know. Or if you were in slavery, you know, a child in slavery, you know, that we know goes on a lot in Asia, for instance. I just think that's another whole ballpark being poor.
We do think that, but again, it's an imaginary, conditioned thinking process. We are imagining from our own experience someone else's life experience and listening to a story that their life is intolerable or whatever it is. My father was blind, and he was blinded because he had a brain tumor, and when they operated on the tumor, they touched his optic nerves and left him blind.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay? I actually witnessed people saying, expressing a belief that he would have been better off dead, that he would have been better off to die in that surgery than to come out of it blind with a young wife and two little children.
Yeah.
Now, my father went on to be a perfectly happy, creative, fulfilled human being in his own right.
Yeah.
He certainly never, I'm sure, had a moment of thinking, gosh, I wish I had died in that surgery rather than needing to live the rest of my life blind.
Well,
so I offer these, I offer these notions just as ways to, and the thing, Stuart, that I would mostly encourage you to question is, what is the payoff in your life for listening to the mind tell you those stories?
The payoff is suffering.
Yeah, yeah, because otherwise you wouldn't be suffering,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
And so to me, the opportunity that we have in not suffering is to be of assistance, to let that not suffering turn into a gratitude and a joy that assists us in wanting to be of service. And I know you a little bit, so I know that is a part of your life already. So to focus more on that out of the gratitude that you feel for all that you have, I suspect offers a great deal more to the world than you suffering because voices want you to focus on the suffering of others.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, guess that cleared that up some.
Well, good. Now, it's not like those voices are going to quit on you.
No, they're not. Oh, no, they're not.
But what just occurred to me when I said that is they could become kind of a flag that every time they come up and want to start down that track, you can look at how you want to express gratitude for all the goodness that there is in the world, how you want to participate in the goodness of the world and add to that, contribute to that, rather than suffering over a story.
Yeah, that's good. What I've been telling myself when I can tell the voices are starting to take over, I just say, come back to center, come back to center.
Yeah.
And that seems to really help. Because you said that to somebody last week, and that really stuck with me.
Good, good.
Yeah.
And now you can add the piece of come back to gratitude and focus on all you're doing, all you're giving, all you're contributing, all the ways you're participating. And life, I suspect, will offer you a few more possibilities even.
Well, that sounds good.
Okay.
Sounds good. Yeah, and I'm continuing to do my coaching and everything with the track club and all that. Like where I went over and helped out with the cross-country meet we had here last weekend with all the kids. It was just great to get out there.
Yeah.
See them.
Yeah. Yes, so that's...
I'm going to keep on doing that. You know,
that's right.
So
yeah,
that,
there's
that,
the there's the focus.
Yeah.
That's it. There's the focus right there. Yeah.
All right.
Well, great to hear your voice, Stuart.
Great to talk to you, Sherry. Thank you so
all
much.
All right. Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Stuart. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have more callers, Sherry.
Good. Thank you.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's Janice from Vancouver.
Well, hello there. How are you?
Long time no see.
Yes. Yes, indeed. What's going on?
Oh, I have so much gratitude for everything, hearing it hearing the callers and hearing the reminder about recording and listening. And I'm going to be traveling coming up. I'm going to be walking in the footsteps of the Buddha over in India. And,
oh, my.
Yes, and I... it occurred to me after hearing about I'm going to be away for most of the time of the email class. Like, why can't I sign up even if I'm not able to access internet and write things? And that I would have that whole source and resource when I come home to work on and to see and to practice myself and to see all the responses of the Sangha, which I love so immensely.
Aha. Uh-huh. And did you conclude that there is no reason that you should not do that?
That's right.
Isn't that good?
Yes, it's brilliant.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, it's funny and it's fabulous. That's exactly the kind of bamboozle that we are really meant to fall for, right? So, I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be away, so I just won't be able to do the email class. And fortunately, you're paying attention, and so you hear the little voice that says, really? Why not? You could do it this way. And because you're used to listening and heeding, you say, well, that's a good point. And then you get to do it. Then you don't lose anything. Then life is just this. You get this, and you get this, and you get this, and you get this. You get as much as you're open to having and receiving.
Mm. Yeah, it's perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that when I was at the monastery recently for the precepts renewal, what I threw away of my karma was my ego sense of I'm not worthy.
Aha, uh-huh. Because that is an ego sense, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, only the ego would want to convince a person that they're not worthy. Right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening in the conversations and realizing just tonight in the conversations hearing, you know, about taking care of this being takes care of all, really. Not, mm-hmm. I'm working out my own salvation, but you know, there's always that little subtraction of maybe a little somewhat lack of kindness or empathy or compassion for this being who is suffering.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And that's that keeping that suffering alive, keeping that person out of the unconditional love and compassion or the loving kindness or that sort of thing is the way ego stays alive, right?
Yeah, there's that duality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, making me separate from life. And,
And many people are heavily conditioned that is the right person thing to do. That's the right person way to be. You should ignore yourself. You should leave yourself out. That to include yourself is selfish. And you don't want to be selfish. That's not a good spiritual way to be. So leave yourself out. And, of course, what that opens us to is just being endlessly selfish. Because I'm left out. I'm a victim. I'm not. Everybody else gets and I don't get. And so because of that, then I have to have more, and I have to have all the time. Yeah. But when we are included, when we allow ourselves to have and receive all that life is giving us, then the experience is one of gratitude. And gratitude tends to make us generous.
I'm smiling.
A little Buddha smile, like all those statues you're going to get to see.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. My goodness. Yeah. The conditioning is just so heavy and for all of us. And
yes.
And the conditioning is just not personal either.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because, you know, this is the one that we know and I would say we're all practicing to realize it's not personal because there actually is no person.
Mm.
Right? So we have these, as you folks would say, processes. That's what's going on. There's a process of ego. There's a process of conditioning. There's a process of suffering. There's a process of, right? And all of those exist in life, and they're all going on. And where the attention is, that's what's reinforced. That's what's made real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
All these possibilities.
Yeah, so many possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which one do we attend to? That's
right.
That's the one we get.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
good.
Noticed a shift when I actually did get home, and there are a lot of there is a lot of content right now in lots of areas in my life. But what I noticed is that where I'm almost expecting to see something coming at me and look to see with awareness, like, oh, here I shouldn't respond or react or something. I actually have been amazed that the stuff comes and there's actually not even there wouldn't even be something. I don't even know how to say this, but like I don't even feel anything. So it isn't like I feel something that I have to withhold a reaction or a response or something. It's just like, it's almost...
Oh, that.
That's all it... Oh, and yeah. I don't actually even... There's no story. There's nothing arising. And I'm just there.
Mm-hmm. And that's the ticket. That's the secret. You're there.
Mm.
Okay? So karmic conditioning works its magic on people, because it can make us unconscious, right? So we're distracted. We're off looking at something else, and there's a storm brewing, and we get tapped on the shoulder and brought back just in time for the storm to hit.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But when we're there, when we're present, when we're here, when we're in the moment where life is unfolding, then we see what's coming up. We see what's coming at us, not, and it's not in a negative way, it's just, this, and then, yeah, it's no problem.
That's it. It's like there's no problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And almost, it feels almost like there's not even the sensations connected.
Yes. Not once we let them go,
right?
Right. So that's if I am caught in a story, so there's whatever content in my life, and I don't see content in my life as events or situations or circumstances. I see it as problems, and I hold a belief that there shouldn't be problems. If I were the right person, if life were as it should be, I wouldn't have problems. Problems wouldn't exist. But I have problems. Therefore, there's something wrong with me. And there's the duality. There's something wrong with me. No, actually, it's not my fault. This is happening to me. Okay, so I go back and forth. It's my fault. No, it's somebody else. It's God's fault. No, it's my fault. No, it's God's fault. And there's the duality. I'm going back and forth. And, of course, I'm suffering because there's this story of this is wrong, it shouldn't be this way, I don't know what to do, I can't get out of it, I've always tried so hard, I've worked so hard and nothing works, and I'm completely miserable, right?
Right.
And I see through that, and I drop that. I don't believe it any longer. I can see that it's a story that has no purpose other than making me miserable. And so I don't look at it that way any longer. I see now opportunities to choose compassion, to be present, to drop karma, to end suffering. So everything, all the events in my life are now opportunities for me to be present and practice having the life that I choose. which is saying yes to life as it is. Okay, so that's what's happening with me. I'm having all these little workshops every day, and I'm seeing through stuff, and now I realize I'm not reacting the way I used to. Okay, well, of course I'm not reacting the way I used to. I'm not the same person I was, right? I'm not living in that story any longer. And so now, actually, life is interesting. It's exciting. You get up in the morning and, well, what's going to happen today?
Yeah, and it's so spacious and relaxing.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And I've been
yes, indeed.
People say that, you know, how relaxing it is. And I was like, wow, I just kind of got it.
Right. And isn't it a great thing to get?
It sure is.
Yeah. Yeah. When do you leave, Janice?
I leave on the 28th.
All right. Well, have a great trip.
Back on the 24th of November.
All right.
So,
have a fabulous time.
Thank you, and thanks for all the guidance, and thank you, everybody in the Sangha.
Yeah, and you'll tell us how it is when you get back.
I will.
All right. Good night.
And I'll walk for you there.
Oh, great. Thank you. I appreciate it. I probably won't get there, so I appreciate that. You have the experience for me.
Yes.
Excellent. It's a good deal.
Okay. Good night.
All right. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. You're listening to Open Air. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. It's Gabriel.
Hey, hi. Gabriel.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm reflecting on something that happened to me at the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat.
Uh-huh.
This is
good timing, Gabriel, because there's one going on right now at the monastery, and the participants are listening in. So don't give away any of the big secrets.
Oh, I will not. But I just want to say that I encourage anyone listening in that can to go, because it's totally worth it. It really, really is.
Good.
So without giving anything away, of course, I just want to speak on an experience that I had, and I don't think this is revealing any details of the retreat, but it is just about me.
Uh-huh.
I think it was either the last night of the retreat or the one before the last, I went to my room, and I was experiencing fear, not to scare anybody. But I was experiencing a pretty intense fear that I think, I'll say this, I don't really understand it. And not that I need to, but I sort of want to explore that. I have in front of me the fear book, which I got inspired by that experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote some notes here. I experienced raw fear, and I got as far as calming and soothing myself, so sort of like putting my hands around myself and just telling myself it's okay, and then I feel like I sort of stopped exploring the fear because I calmed myself down and I was overwhelmed by it.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like I'm being revisited by it. Sometimes I'm like in life and I'll think that someone will yell at me or hit me or I'll just have fear. Like right now I'm experiencing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So I have some ideas, Gabriel.
Okay.
As I bet you figured, huh?
Of course, that's what I'm calling.
So the first thing that I'm going to tell you is that, and I know you know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Mm-hmm. Fear is ego.
Yeah.
That's what it is, okay? And we are conditioned to believe that when ego gets threatened and shoots out a big old jolt of fear, that it's we, us, whatever the English is there,
mm-hmm.
who is afraid. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So a big old jolt of fear goes through me, and I'm meant to believe that I am afraid, And then I'm meant to look for what I'm afraid of. Okay? Because then there will be content with it, and I am meant to focus on the content, and the cycle continues. All right?
That's great, because I got the Peace quote today. I think it was about, like, focusing on karma not only keeps it going, but, like, it increases it or something like that?
Yes, yes. So here's another piece of this. For a very long time now, when we have talked, you have been lit up like the proverbial Christmas tree.
Yep.
Yeah? I mean, really in an expansive place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yep.
Fear is what ego uses to shrink that expansiveness down to a size ego can manage.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. So I think the fear makes, quote unquote, me separate. And then I become a self. I become an individual.
Yes.
And then when that expansiveness and that Christmas tree lit up experience is happening, I am everything. And
that's it.
Yeah. So that duality of that expansive Christmas tree, which is another thing that came up for me during retreat, and then the fear, it's almost like this back and forth between the two.
Yes.
That feels kind of bipolar, because it's like one day I'm super, or not even one day, one minute I'm super lit up, the next minute I'm terrified.
Yes.
And that doesn't happen always like that, with that contrast. Sometimes it's levels of both.
Yes. Yes.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. None of this is relevant, but at the same time, there's this interest in it, and I think that that's the piece that conditioning is using. It's sort of like, how interesting is this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can support that, Gabriel, if the interest is along the lines of watching how the processes happen. So, for instance, when I wrote the fear book, it was because mm-hmm. I was watching what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So the depression book was nothing more than writing down everything that I saw happening through a depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So we can watch processes happen, and it's extremely illuminating, and it can be useful. So, for instance, when you get to the point where you have watched this back and forth, now, watching it, attending to it, being aware of it, is very different from getting involved with it. Okay? So, as you said, when the fear comes up, you become a separate self again, in a way that you are not when you are the everything of expansiveness.
Yeah?
Yeah? So you're watching that illusion of a separate self come into existence. You're watching the sensations in the body, the stories that go with it. And one of the things, this is just a little parens here, because I know you'll see it, that the sensations, the shot of adrenaline comes first. And then the explanation about it comes afterwards. If you stop believing the explanation, you will realize that it's tied to nothing. It is simply a process that happens that is meant to pull you into a story.
Yeah, I think that's a better way of saying what I meant by it's not interesting. What I meant by that was that the explanation becomes this interesting thing when the experience and the studying it at a deep level or seeing it in a deep way is, as you say, very illuminating, and it's something that's book-worthy. But then getting caught in the surface of the explanation as a as an aftermath of the adrenaline rush, it, that's sort of like, because I'm paying attention, I'm seeing that's where the getting caught is happening.
Yes, yes. And what you're doing is learning to go through the process such that, here's the useful part, down the road, you run into, and where it happens a lot is with meditators, okay, people doing awareness practice, because when ego gets threatened enough, that's what it does. People sit down to meditate, and they get a big old jolt of terror, and if that happens a few times in a row, most people will quit, and which is exactly what that system has in mind. But what you will know is what it is, because you've been from the first sensations of it through all the stories of it out the other side. And if somebody said to you, you know, I every time I meditate, I get this, I just get this big jolt of terror, you can with great confidence say, yeah, of course. And this is what's going on. So notice that And somebody will continue meditating and paying attention and practicing awareness instead of going off with ego into a story of that's not for you. It's really too frightening. There's, you know, something awful is going to happen to you.
Yeah. I love that you said that because I'm a teacher and I teach singing lessons. And my students, when they're on the verge of a breakthrough or they just broke through and then they reflect upon what just happened, they get this terror.
Yes,
and it's,
exactly.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yes, it's designed to shut them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the thing that I think is hard to get is that that jolt of adrenaline or that terror rush or that fear means absolutely nothing.
Yes.
Other than, you know, something's just trying to stop you, which is the thing that people are skeptical about. It's like, how could there be something trying to stop me if I can't see it? But it's really
right.
Real. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and if people pay attention a little while, they'll see that it's the case. You know, people will say to me, yeah, but fear keeps us safe. You know, fear keeps me from, you know, just stepping out into traffic or, you know, opening the door on a speeding car. Well, no, it doesn't.
No, intelligence keeps you from doing that.
That's right. And fear is what comes in after any event.
I love that you said that.
Yeah, it comes in. If something really dangerous happens, you know, you're walking down the street and somebody sticks a gun in your ribs and asks for your wallet, you know, while it's happening, probably nothing's going on with you except trying to get your wallet out and hope you live. Right? Mm-hmm. Afterwards, you know, the knees turn to jelly and, you know, you have to, well, anyway, you're scared. But it's the story of, oh my God, that I could have died. Okay. But while it's going on, there's none of that.
Mm-hmm. It seems there's a cultural belief that fear is a primal feeling, but it sounds like we're describing it as a secondary thing.
I think it is, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I feel. Yeah, fear is a label.
Fear is a label. Fear is a label, and what people are usually labeling is a big old shot of adrenaline. And that part of it is primal. You know, when you see that tiger come around the corner, you get enough oomph to be able to run as fast as you can in the opposite direction. But that has nothing to do with stories of terror and danger and awful things are going to happen to you and that sort of thing. So if we only experience that rush of adrenaline when we need it, if we didn't call it fear and we only experience that when we need it, we would experience it very rarely.
That's what I was going to say. There was no lion in the room, but then there was that conditioning or egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, acting as a lion.
Yes.
And then there's this reaction to something that is imaginary, pretending to be real, And then there's something that's vulnerable to believing in this unreal threat. And it's like a Wizard of Oz moment where it's like Dorothy and everybody else is scared of this big wizard. And then, you know, the little dog goes and opens the curtain and then you can see that.
Little fat man.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to watch as I'm revealing this process, how conditioning is upping and upping and upping and my heart's just beating faster. And I'm here just in shock at how cruel this thing is.
Yeah.
Because what did this beautiful guy that's doing everything it can to live do to deserve that, you know?
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely nothing. Except as you give more attention to this beautiful guy and the life that he's living and the gift that he is to the world, there's very little for ego to feed on. And that's, it's fighting for its life. Yeah.
Sorry, ego.
Yeah, it's scared. It's scared it's going to die. And so this is the way it attempts to keep enough attention to hang on for a while longer. And eventually, it's just not going to work.
Yeah. It's really a shame for the ego, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, if you'd like to play a helpful role in life, I'm sure we could find something for you to do. But if you want to run the show and cause suffering and be a victim and live in melodrama, I can't support you in that any longer. I'm sorry. Those days are over.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Sherry. That's why I always call you. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad.
That's the message. That's the message for it. Hey, if you want to sign up, if you want to get on board with this life that we have, then you're welcome. Otherwise, I'm not listening to you.
Yeah, I can't wait around for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Sherry, as always.
Oh, thank you, Gabriel. Good night.
Have a great night. Good night.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Gabriel. What a great way to end the show, Sherry. That was fun.
That was fun, huh?
Yes.
Yeah.
So let's do it again.
All right. How about next week?
I'm free.
All right. I plan on being free myself. And we won't be in an email class then, will we?
Let's see. No, not yet.
Not yet. So, yeah. All right. Then I'm your date. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Bye.